Hey, all you nerds out there, are you looking for more wrestling content or podcasts? Then go on over to Facebook, Spotify, iTunes, Twitter, and SoundCloud, and check out NXT and We with PJ and Brett. These fellow nerds review every single NXT episode and also have their very own wrestling interview series, among other fun stuff. So go check out NXT and We today with PJ and Brett. Also, A-Rock Designs. I want to take a minute to give a quick shout out to A-Rock Designs. That is spelled A-R-O-C-K-K Designs. A-Rock Designs is ran by Ashley Rodriguez. She makes all those cool wrestling cups you see floating around. So if you want to get your hands on any custom merchandise, hit up Ashley Rodriguez at A-Rock Designs. If you can think it, she can make it. Last but not least, do you love wrestling and do you want to talk more about wrestling? Then head on over to Wrestling Review Society on Facebook. WRS is ran by my good friend Kevin Rodriguez. Kevin interviews your fave pro wrestlers every week and has the most amazing free, that's right, free giveaway. All you have to do is join Wrestling Review Society on Facebook and you could be the next big winner. This week's episode is brought to you by Design by Dunbar. If you need a logo design, flyers, e-commerce, website, or anything at all, go check out Designs by Dunbar at www.facebook.com/designbydunbar. What is up, nerds, and welcome to episode 34 of What's Up Wrestler, a podcast by nerds of wrestling. I am your host, Justin Del Rio, and my guest at this very time is the Man of Steel, Mike Verna.
What's up, everybody? This is the Man of Steel, Mike Verna, and you are listening to the Nerds of Wrestling Podcast.
What's going on, Mike? How you doing today, man?
I'm doing pretty good, you know, hanging in there. It's been, month three now we're approaching, so I think it's fair to say that I've gotten used to what's going on here.
Yeah, it's honestly flew by.
Oh, big time, man. Big time. I was just telling my family, I feel like we went from winter to summer.
Literally, like this whole thing started, it was like 50-something degrees, and now we're up to like almost 80.
Yeah, man. And that's the real reason why people get sick. Yeah. Change of weather and not being prepared for it.
Exactly. That's how the weather is in New England. You know, we all know that.
Oh, for sure. So it's not that much different in New York, I promise you that.
Oh, yeah. So what else have you been up to, man, during this whole time, during, you know, quarantine and just our new norm?
Yeah, it's definitely the new norm. In the beginning, I was kind of like looking at it as a chance to kind of rehab and like rest up and heal any kind of nagging injuries and stuff like that. And then time kind of went by and it started getting a little restless. Like, you know, you miss wrestling, you miss your everyday routine. You know, I haven't gone to the gym in 3 months. But luckily, I've been able to work out at home. My buddy's got a nice garage gym, so we've been able to get some things done there. But other than that, man, I've been kind of just doing the average type things. I've been getting back into video gaming. Luckily, the movie industry, even though it's shut down, they are still active with some work. So I actually booked a commercial for Philadelphia Cheesecake that I'm shooting tomorrow. So I'll be keeping busy with that, at least.
Nice. And how did you get into that, man?
Into acting or into the commercial itself?
Both.
Well, acting came through wrestling, believe it or not. So, you know, obviously we know wrestling is probably the purest form of theater and entertainment out there right now. So I actually got scouted by my agent, I'd say 2 years ago, during a match in New York or in Brooklyn or New York City. I forgot where it was. And then I got an email from him. I said, hey, you know, I'm interested in representing you based on your look. Have you ever done any acting? And I said, well, you know, other than wrestling, not so much. I've always played baseball in school. I never really had a chance to do any kind of like dramatics or theater work. But I kind of jumped into it and said, yeah, let me give it a shot. It's always been fun. I mean, wrestling is a sense of, you know, theater, like we said. So I said, let me give it a shot. And then from then, I kind of like gained a passion to it. And I've just been acting since, I guess, 2018, pretty steadily. Worked on some pilots, worked on some commercials. This is my first national commercial, so when I'm done with it tomorrow, we'll be able to see the commercial nationally, which is very nice. But you know, it's a grind, just like wrestling.
Oh yeah, that's awesome, man. I never knew you were, you know, like an actor as well.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's wild stuff. I'm trying to be somewhere in the middle of John Cena, The Rock, and Batista. If I can find that, I'll be a happy man.
In due time.
Yes, sir.
Are you like a big movie geek as well?
Yeah, I'd say so. Like, you know, it's weird because now that I've been an actor, my career with acting is getting a little bit more serious with more auditions and more role offers and stuff like that. You know, it's funny because they'll send you – sometimes these auditions aren't based off of the script of the movie or the show. They're based off of, like, a monologue or scene that you choose that can resemble what the plot of the movie is. And then I'll find myself looking. I'll say, what movie do I want to do? Like, I don't even know what scene I want to do, what monologue I want to do. So I used to think that I was a big movie geek until, like – I actually started practicing the craft, and I turned around and said, I don't know half the shit that I thought I knew.
I love that, dude. I'm a big movie geek, man. I don't know if you've been keeping up with movies on Netflix, but they've been dropping a lot of new stuff lately.
Oh, yeah, they absolutely have. I tried watching Uncut Gems the other night, but I fell asleep on that.
So good.
Only because my sleep schedule is backwards. I didn't get a chance to even look at the movie yet. I think I fell asleep in the opening credits, so I'll get to that for sure. But I do, yeah, you're right about that. That is the cool thing with all this remote stuff going on. You know, Netflix and Amazon and Hulu, they got all these movies and shows just in their vault, just waiting to be released. So, you know, I think they're looking at it now, like, let's just spoil them a little bit. Let's give them some stuff. And it's the same thing with the network. If you look at the WWE Network, it's pretty similar with the Undertaker's thing releasing now and just more content coming out there. So, I mean, the mediums are trying to make our life a little bit easier.
Yeah, 100%. Speaking of the documentary for Taker, did you check it out yet?
So I'm not going to be honest with you because I've been busy with this commercial thing. I haven't fully got a chance to dive into it. I mean, I've seen all the clips and stuff on Twitter and Facebook. So I've seen a little preview of it, but I haven't had a chance to sit down and binge it yet. Yeah, I've heard only but good things.
It's really good. Yeah, definitely when you watch that, when you do watch a Taker documentary and when you are able to check out Uncut Gems, definitely let me know. Uncut Gems, dude. Phenomenal movie. Adam Sandler did amazing in that role. I can't say enough about it.
No, and it's definitely exciting to see him potentially play a role that's different than what you're used to seeing. So I'm actually excited for that.
Yeah, you know, I know you said you were very busy. So have you been, you know, trying to keep up a little bit with, you know, Raw, you know, SmackDown, NXT, or even AEW?
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know what it is? I'll be honest with you, and I'm not sure if every other wrestler would say this, but as you become deeper into the career and you actually, you know, you've been doing this for almost 10 years, you view wrestling very differently. You don't watch it as much as a fan, obviously, as you did beforehand. Not saying that I'm not a fan of the product. I love watching it and all that stuff, but you kind of find yourself avoiding it to an extent because you don't want to be warped, like brainwashed in a way. Like, you don't want to. It's almost like, it's funny because when I work with some directors, they turn around and I try to make a reference. Like, if I'm working on a role and they say, and I say, let's try to do it like this, you know, and I'll use another movie or show as a reference, the director will likely say, yeah, I don't watch movies and TV shows like that because it'll influence my writing or it'll influence my vision. So I look at that almost with wrestling in a way where it's like, I try to stay away from it. I don't, let me put it this way. I don't stay away from it, but I try not to vigorously watch it, you know, habitually, because I don't want to find myself in a situation where I say, oh, wow, he just did that. Maybe I should do that with my character. Or maybe I should do that move. You know, and then you also find yourself not appreciating or liking certain storylines, and then you kind of get sour on the product, and you don't want to do that. I mean, you're a professional wrestler. That's your career. You always want to stay positive and optimistic about the product itself. So, I mean, I watch it in doses. In short, that's what I mean. I watch it in doses.
Yeah, it's all good, man. And I 100% understand what you're saying. You know, when you're saying, you know, being sour, you know, not really liking the product, I think a lot of people right now aren't really too crazy about the product just because of, you know, the lack of the audience, the lack of the WWE Universe, not being able, you know, to attend the shows. So, you know, WWE is very kind of just bland right now, but I do give them credit for them doing what they're doing.
Totally. I couldn't agree more with you on that. I think, you know, they got a lot of criticism with it, AEW as well, how they should just shut down altogether. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's an argument for that, and maybe they should shut down altogether, but people need to look at the bright side of this and look at these two top wrestling companies trying to give wrestling fans something to be happy about, something to be, it's not a medium, you know, like guys like you guys who are at shows every single month for Northeast Wrestling. You guys haven't been to show since what? What was the last show we had?
March Mayhem. You know, yeah, March Mayhem was the last one.
That was our last show there. So that was the beginning of March. I think it was March 7th to be exact.
Yeah.
So you guys haven't been to a show since then for the most part. So now you have the opportunity to watch something you love on a weekly basis, and it's not a rerun. But I do have to agree with you, not seeing the fans there. That I think is the biggest debate about it. And I know that Raw just started doing it by adding some wrestlers at ringside, and AEW's been doing it since they started it. But, you know, it's hard to perform as a professional wrestler without the fans. What we do is based for the fans, and it's based on the fans. We don't care about anyone else but the fans. So not to have any live fans in the crowd, it's got to be hard for the wrestlers. It's got to be hard for the boys and girls. Like, you know, they're professionals. They're going to do what they got to do regardless. But we feed off your energy. You know, if we don't have that, you feel everything 10 times more. You get more winded quick. Everything's more painful. Like, that's the truth.
Yeah. Hey, God, I can't believe how long it's been. March 7th. Oh, my Lord. That's a long time. Jesus Christ. I remember somebody asked me, they're like, are you having wrestling withdrawals? I'm like, bro, I have withdrawals as soon as I leave the building after a show is over.
That we appreciate. I got to be honest, like, not to get off topic, but there's something about the Northeast Wrestling fan base that's very different than a lot of other shows that I work on. It really is. Like, a word I like to use for you guys is very very forgiving. In a way where it's like, you know, it's a happy environment. You know, I come from New York. New York and Philly are very smart marquee places, you know, where they almost, some fans look for the fuck up. Am I allowed to curse?
Yeah, you can curse. Yeah, go ahead. All good.
Yeah. Some fans like to look for the fuck ups and the botches and stuff like that, and they want to almost hijack the show. And you know, I'm happy I got to experience that early in my career because I got to see. You know, it hardens you as a wrestler. Like, when you're green and you're an experience and you see how the crowd reacts to certain matches, it kind of prepares you for what you want to do when you create your own matches. But then you get to a place like Northeast Wrestling, and it's like everybody's engaged, everybody's interested in the storylines, everybody is either a fan of the good guys, fan of the bad, or hate the bad guys. It works. It's the formula of wrestling, and it works. And I give a lot of credit to Michael Lombardi for that, because he's built a federation. He didn't build an indie. He didn't build a little backyard federation. He built an actual working, profitable, successful wrestling company. And for people who are still in the indies like myself, who are not really ready to jump to a main company just yet, you know, it's great to have a company like Northeast Wrestling that is just, you know, feeding us month after month.
Yeah, dude, I love that. I love your outtake on Northeast Wrestling. And Northeast Wrestling, man, for the nerds of wrestling who are listening, if you haven't checked out Northeast Wrestling or haven't been to a show, definitely try to go to a show after this whole thing is over. I promise you. And like, you know, like you heard Mike Verna say, it is worth it. It is such a good promotion and so much fun. But, you know, while we're talking about promotions, while we're talking about wrestling, Mike, how did you get into wrestling? What was the start of your career?
For sure, man. So when I was growing up, I had two passions. I was a really big fan of two things. And I was, it's funny. Now looking back in hindsight, I would say three, because I was a big movie fan and I used to make a lot of home movies and stuff like that with my cousins and my siblings and stuff. So it's funny how that worked out. But how I got into wrestling was that when I was a kid, I still am a huge baseball fan and a huge wrestling fan. And I just loved the both of them. It's all I cared about. It was my two main hobbies, my two main interests. And I started playing baseball at 3 years old. And as I got older, baseball kind of started becoming a job. And it's weird because I'm a college baseball coach now, and I tell this to my kids, and I try not to push them away from it. But I said I chose wrestling over baseball because baseball was a job at the time. And I it's not that I wasn't enjoying it, but it was when you reach a point in your life, 18, 19 years old, you kind of want to enjoy like the college life, the girls, the partying, all that early stuff. And you don't want to feel like you're tied down to something. And that was baseball for me at that time. Like I said, I started playing since I was 3 years old. So from 3 to about 18, I played competitively through high school, men's league, all those it was basically a 9-to-5 job, let's put it that way. And then college came around, and I was really undecided if I wanted to play. Now, mind you, I had a couple of offers from a D2 school, and all the rest were D3. So I'm not trying to say that I was going to be a D1 MLB standout. I was going to play 4 years of college baseball, and I was probably never going to play again and move on and get a real job, and that was that. So I said, do I do that, or do I try to pursue this career and this dream that I always wanted to do as a kid but never knew I was able to do? So about 2011, when I decided I wasn't going to play baseball, I started looking. So I made that decision. Long story short, I made the decision, let me not play baseball. Let me get into coaching. I got a coaching job at my old high school. So I immediately stood in the game, which really made things a lot easier. So I was like, all right, I could still be playing I can still be involved in baseball without having to play it and still enjoy my life as a college student, young adult, doing whatever the hell I want to do. So I kind of had the best of both worlds. And then 2010 came around, and that was my first year coaching was my first year coaching was done. And then I really started looking into wrestling. I said, okay, now's my chance to really start doing this. And this is why I stopped playing baseball, was to pursue wrestling. So let me really take this seriously. So I started looking at schools. And mind you, when you're a kid, you have no idea how to get involved in wrestling. You don't know that there are academies. You don't know that there are schools. You don't know that there's any training facilities. It doesn't exist. You think it's like a circus thing. Like, once a year, the circus comes to town and they recruit a bunch of people to be wrestlers. Like, you don't know how to do it. You know. So then once I found out that there were some schools, I was like, all right, now it's time to get serious. So I started at NYWC, New York Wrestling Connection, out in Long Island, New York. So it's about an hour drive away from where I live in the city. I was trained by Tony Nese and Alex Reynolds, two TV stars now. That worked out. The school was overseen by Mikey Whipwreck. So it had a really good, staff clientele, and it really was a motivating thing. Now the school is run by Bull James, so it still has a lot of credit behind it, which is a good thing. It continued to go. So about 2011, 2012 came around, and I was trained the old school way. I was trained where you couldn't get into a ring after a year. So mind you, my first year of training was all chain wrestling, all basic grappling and lockups, all on the floor. I was not allowed to step in the ring. So I did a year of that, and you got to imagine that was a little discouraging in the beginning, because you're sitting there and you're like, all right, I'm paying this every single month. I want to be a wrestler, but they wouldn't even let me in the ring. So, you know, you kind of feel weird, but you're going through the motions and you're enjoying it and you're really learning. And I say this to this day, if I didn't spend a year and a half at NYWC, I wouldn't be the wrestler I am today. So fast forward a little bit, I got an offer to work at GNC, and I was like 19 years old at this time. So I was a manager at GNC, so they were offering me like $13 an hour at 19 years old. So I was like, yeah, I'm taking that. So between the job and like school and everything like that, wrestling training became a little bit harder because it was an hour drive. So it was only open 2 days a week at the time, Tuesdays and Sundays. So you were kind of like, okay, I can't work Tuesday, but I have to work Tuesday, and then I have class on Tuesday. So shit was just getting crazy. So eventually I had to kind of take a pause. So from the summer of like 2012, from 2011 to 2012 was my first year of training, and then summer of 2012 came and I stopped training. So I didn't know if I was ever going to get back in the ring. So now I had a lot of doubts and regrets. I'm like, oh, I should have played college baseball. I should have never gave up the game. I should have been doing this. Why did I try wrestling? So I had a lot of like messed up thoughts about what the decision was. And then in my regular gym back in Brooklyn, one of the trainers was actually a wrestler, and I had no idea. And I met him and I started talking to him. I was like, hey man, like, I heard you're a wrestler. I do that too. I did that too. He's like, nah. He's like, I'm a different wrestler. I'm not like the mat wrestler. No. I was like, no, I do what you do. Jump off top ropes, that kind of wrestling. And then we kind of clicked right there. And I was like, so where do you train? He's like, I train at the Ludus Wrestling Center. And I was like, where is that? He's like, it's in Brooklyn. I was like, what? There's a wrestling school in Brooklyn? So, and then he's like, yeah, it's run by the SAT, Joel Maximo and Jose Maximo. And I was like, okay, where do I sign up? And he brought me down and I met Joel. And then from then, my wrestling career had a rebirth. It rejuvenated. I had a brand new start to my career. And I started training with Joel. I made my debut October 13th, 2013. And I was in a weird five-man dance. That was one of the worst performances of my life. But, but everyone remembers that first match, am I right?
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. You know, and what was your mindset going into that match? Like, what were the nerves like?
Don't mess up. I'll be honest with you, I was nervous the entire week. It's funny that you say that, because I look at it now and I look at my performances now, and it's very hard to – I don't really get nervous that much anymore. I'm sure you can imagine after doing something for a long time, you kind of adjust.
Oh, yeah.
If the crowd is really big, if the crowd is really small, it is what it is. You kind of just go with the flow. And like I said, you know, if the fan base is kind of like you guys, like, it's forgiving. You know, they know that you're putting your bodies out on the line. There's very little to be nervous about. What's the worst that happens? Someone tweets about you and said you had a bad match.
Yeah, well like, yeah. Exactly. We actually have a question on Facebook. It's a baseball question. It's from Jared. He wants to know, do you think that your college baseball players will be able to get another year of eligibility due to COVID-19, and how have you handled not being able to coach them this year?
Great question. So the good thing is that they are all given back their year of eligibility. So everyone will be able to come back next year and play, and that's NCAA rule. So everyone is coming back, no problems whatsoever. The only issue is that if you have a graduating, so I'm a JUCO coach. So I work for a 2 years college.
Okay.
So if we have a sophomore who's on pace to graduate, that's his decision now to either stay or go. So the big problem with that is that if they enter their sophomore year and they didn't play, there's no stats to base themselves off to go to another school. So after you do your first 2 years at a JUCO, I'm sure you imagine you go to a four-year school and finish your next 2 years of eligibility at an NCAA, D2, D1, whatever it may be. So we have our sophomores now who did 2 years of college, and they didn't play their second year. So they only have freshman year stats. So it's kind of hard for them to go to another school based on their freshman year stats and no stats from this year. So the only issue now is we have these guys who are sophomores that have to decide if they're willing to take the risk and leave, or if they're going to kind of stay in and just take extra credits and play one more year. So that's the good thing about that. Now, how hard it's been very, 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 very hard. I'm going through withdrawals. We played three games, and then the season was canceled.
Oh.
It's terrible, man. It was a terrible, terrible thing. And the sad thing is that this was a team that was built to win this year. We spent a lot of time with them in the offseason. We prepared them for the season. We got them stronger. They bought into the idea and the culture of what we're trying to do. It really was pretty heartbreaking to see that the season ended on those terms. I mean, the kids are still very much engaged. They're still all, we're Zooming with them weekly. We stay in contact. We have group messages, group chats. So we are very much engaged and involved still, which is a good thing. But it does suck that we didn't get a chance to have a season this year.
Yeah, and, it sucks that there's no baseball at all, man.
Tell me about it. I don't think we're going to have baseball at this point. The rumors they're saying is that they just can't agree on the money.
Honestly,
and it sucks that it's money. It sucks that it's money that they have to decide.
Yeah, honestly, there's no point right now, man. Like, it's we're a month and a half away from All-Star break, and there's no point. I mean, it doesn't make sense to start in July with no All-Star,
That was the thing I looked at it too, is that I said, it's baseball is a marathon season. It's 162 games. It's not made to, if you go on a 10 game winning streak, it doesn't mean in April, it doesn't mean anything in September.
Exactly.
And as a Mets fan, I know all about that, but it's hard because I said, if they can get a 100 game schedule in, if they can get an 80 game schedule in and play half a season, I can see that working to an extent. And I kind of enjoyed the ideas of them doing the one league, three divisions, the East, the West, and the Central, and the teams are all combined, like the Yankees and the Mets being in the same division, and the Cubs and the White Sox being in the same division. I thought that was cool. So I was kind of interested in that and pretty excited about that. But now, the more and more you hear about them not being able to come up with a financial agreement, now you look at, okay, that 100-game season might now turn to a 75-game season. And if they can't get themselves ready before that, now you're looking at a 60-game season, and then that's pointless. Because like I said, you take away the marathon of baseball, it's not baseball anymore.
100%, dude. Oh, and you said you're a Mets fan?
Yo, big Mets fan.
as least you're not a Yankee fan. Like, we're good.
I hate the Yankees.
I'm a big Sox, Red Sox fan.
There you go. So forgive us for 86, but we mutually hate the Yankees.
It's all good. Yeah, exactly. It's all good. 86, man. Buckner, damn it, man. Anyway. So, go back to wrestling, man. After your first match was over, you got it out of the way. You said you were very nervous. What are some other shows that, obviously after that match was over, you must have felt pretty good, must have felt like pretty accomplished.
Oh, absolutely. The best thing about, for most wrestlers, I'm sure we all have the same story. When it comes to our first match, it's usually packed out with our family and friends. So, you go into the match nervous, but because you want to make a good impact, you want to have a good showing, but you also have a sense of relief because you're performing in front of people that love you no matter what. So you can mess up and you can do this, and they're still cheering for you. And I remember my first match specifically, I'm sitting backstage and Homicide was on the show. And my friends and family, they were just screaming, "We want Fern." not a single person knew who I was in the crowd, except for those people. So then we're sitting backstage and Homicide, I'm sitting right next to Homicide. He has no idea who I am. And he goes, "Who the hell is this kid? Who they cheering for? I'm not even out there yet." And I'm just sitting there. I wanted to crawl into a hole because I'm like, Homicide's here, he's main event, and they're cheering for me, and he's cutting a promo, and they're cheering for me, and I'm like, oh my god, this is something, I'm screwed, I'm getting buried on day one.
Yeah, so you have a lot, You have like some big shoes to fill there, man.
Yeah, tell me about it. And now I look back at it, and it's all worth it. Now that I'm good friends with D and all that, but it's funny stuff.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love that story. So after that first match was over, after your first show, what are some other promotions that you got the chance to work for? Did it take a while for you to get booked in some other shows?
Yes and no. So like in the beginning of my career, New England was not hot. New England was kind of like just kind of beginning to get a little steam behind them. New York and the tri-state area, New York, Philadelphia, Connecticut, well, not so much Connecticut, but more like New York, New Jersey, and Philadelphia were really popping with stuff. We had Jersey All-Pro. We had PWS at the time. Chikara, CZW, all those companies were in their height. And the New York scene had about 10 to 12 different indies running. So I had the chance to kind of bounce around those early in my career because, you know, my trainer was Joel Maximo. So he had a lot of connections with the New York, New Jersey scene. I mean, he's in the SAT is the wrestling legends, the New York legends. So, you know, anyone who knows Red or the Maximos, you kind of are allowed to go under their wing. And if they put a good word in for you, you kind of have a good opportunity to work. So I worked. I mean, I didn't mind you. The beginning of my career, I didn't work for any top companies. I didn't work for CZW or Chikara yet. You know, I worked for my home company, which was NYWC and FSW at the time. FSW doesn't exist anymore because Joel took a break from promoting and just preparing to get back in the ring. So those are my two home companies I worked for. And then I worked for some other small companies like Warriors of Wrestling. I worked for Dynasty Pro Wrestling, which was upstate New York, and I worked for In the Biz in Virginia. So like, you know, in the beginning of your career, you just want to get in the car and drive. You know, you have that rush of like, I'm gonna be a road brother. So you get behind the car and you just start driving to all these companies. You don't get paid nothing whatsoever. You wrestle and then you go home. So I did a lot of that early on, where it's like, okay, Joel would call me and say, hey, Jason out in the biz in Virginia wants to book you guys. You down to go? Hell yeah, I'm down to go. How much they pay? No, zero. Okay, no problem. So you get in the car and you just go. So I did a lot of that early on, and then I remember I became champion for the company Dynasty, like I mentioned, up in upstate New York. And RJ DeLuise, Mark, a good friend of mine now, he was the commentator and ring announcer, and he's very good. He's from New England, he's not from New England. He went to school with Chase Del Monte from Chaotic Wrestling. And Chase was looking for new talents. And this guy, RJ, he stepped up and he said, Chase, you got to get Mike Verna. Mike Verna, he's like the next best thing, next big thing in New York. You know, get him now, make him your guy, and run with it. So then a week later, I got a call from Chaotic Wrestling. And they said, hey, we're looking to book you. Are you interested in coming down to New England? And I said, absolutely. I've been waiting to get into New England big time. And mind you, this is about 6 years into my career at this time, or 5 years. So I did a lot of smaller shows early on before I got my quote-unquote big break. I was able to do Chikara pretty early in my career. I think I started with Chikara in 2015. So that was my first big company. But I feel like when I broke into New England, that's really where I made a name for myself, because Chaotic led to Beyond. Chaotic led to XWA, XWA led to Beyond led to Northeast Wrestling, and then I'm kind of able to work for all those top companies out there in the New England area, and it continues to bring my value and my name up, and that's what's got me, you know, working for companies like that is what got me my tryouts with WWE, my connections with AEW, and all that stuff. Like, so it's kind of opened doors for me, let's put it that way.
That's amazing, dude, and some top-notch promotions, you named it there. So you said you started working in New England, you said, like 5 years ago?
I'd say 2016.
So that's pretty, not recent, but like that wasn't that long ago.
It wasn't that long ago, if you really think about it. And it's crazy because, like, most of my career now, like, now that I'm at the, sorry, debuted 2013, 7 year mark. So about 7 years. So about 7 years now, almost 8 years, I've been working I've been training for 10. But I've been working for almost 8. So now to look at that, like, more than half of my career was primarily spent with New England wrestling. And I'm a New York guy, you know, so it just shows you the evolution and the hotbed that is New England right now when it comes to professional wrestling, and how popular and how skilled all of New England is when it comes to wrestling. Like, I'm sure there's some subpar companies or companies that aren't so popular. Don't get me wrong, but if I feel like every single company in New England has some kind of esteem to it.
Yeah,
you know, it's a prestige, whatever it may be. Like every, I mean, you just see the talent that comes out of New England, and you just know. I just feel lucky that I'm an adopted New England son. Let's put it that way.
No, dude, 100%. You know, after you know, once you started getting all these promotions outside your home based company, like you know, you said Jakara, you know, some other promotions. You said ZZW, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, yeah, I worked for CZW briefly. I was, you know, it's not to get too much into the politics of it, but if you work for Chikara, you shouldn't work for CZW. Let's put it that way.
Yeah,
Chikara is my home. I'll never leave Chikara for another company.
And that's up in Philly.
Yeah, it's Philly. Pretty close, believe it or not. Only an hour and a half from my house.
It's about, I don't know. I'm in Connecticut, so
five,
I don't know.
Six, five,
yeah, probably 6 hours around. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
It's out of the way from, you know, Northeast Wrestling.
Big time.
But what was Jakara like for your first time stepping into, you know, wrestling in Philly?
Jakara was very interesting because, as you know, Jakara is its own universe. So the Man of Steel, Mike Verner, does not exist in Jakara.
Oh.
So his cousin, Sloan Caprice of the Closers, is in Jakara. So, yeah, so that was the interesting thing for me. When I first broke into Jakara, I was kind of confused because my first match I ever did with Jakara was the Young Lions Cup, it's called, which is basically a tournament for, at the time, wrestlers under 25 and under. So I did that, and I wrestled as myself. I wrestled as Mike Verner. And then my performance there was good, so I got an email from Quack. I'd say about 6 months later, he's like, hey, how do you feel about joining our roster full time? And I was very excited. I was like, this is my first major company. This is my first big break. So I hopped on that in a heartbeat, but he didn't tell me any direction to what I was supposed to do. He said the role will be a security / hitman / muscle for a boss. And I said, oh, that sounds cool. It's like a mafia thing. And that's like my favorite thing. So I was kind of excited for it, but I thought I was going to be Mike Verner still. And then I showed up and I was handed a pair of green trunks. Rex Lawless and I were the closers in Jakara, me and Rex. Rick Rowland and Sloan Caprice, just so you have a little pretense to it. So we were given these green trunks with these gold piping on it that kind of looked like a leprechaun. And I said, what is this? And he goes, well, meet your new boss. And it was Hornswoggle.
No shit.
So we were part of the big deal. It's called Team Big Deal. Me, Swoggle, and Rex. And we were a trio for Chikar. And we had a lot of fun. We really had a lot of fun. You know, it was a good time. Eventually, Swoggle's character was phased out, and me and Rex did some other things with other characters. And right now, as the pandemic's going, obviously we're not really pumping out much new content at Chikara, but I'm very excited. Let me backtrack. Chikara Live Action Arcade every Saturday morning. That was a brand new episodic thing that they released during the pandemic. So that's all new content. But in regards to live shows, we're not seeing that right now at the moment, so we'll soon find out who we'll be working with in regards to our new boss, quote unquote.
I think all the nerds listening, man, we're all excited to hear, you know, and see what's next for you guys.
Hell yeah.
You know, speaking of all these wrestling promotions, you know, all these other spots that you got a chance to wrestle in, we have a question from a fellow nerd, Ben. He wants to know, what was it like to wrestle in Italy?
Oh man, tell me about it. Hold on one sec. My phone was ringing. I had to cancel it.
It's all good.
Italy, man, that was one of my dream places to wrestle in. I mean, obviously, I'm a very, very proud Italian-American person. I work for the Italian-American Baseball Foundation. I work for Eddie, and I am an ambassador for Italian-American wrestling. I'm usually the middleman to bring any kind of Italian talent to the U.S., and I go there whenever I want. So it kind of works out that way. I mean, it's beautiful. The thing about the indie scene in Italy is it's not as popular as you know, Germany and you know, all the other European companies, obviously the UK. So there's it's a big gap in regards to the popularity. But over the last 2 years, this would have been my third year going. Obviously, it couldn't happen under the circumstances. But over the last 2 years that I was there, I saw a massive growth in popularity and crowd sizes and indie names and just notoriety when it comes to working, when it comes to Italian wrestling. And it's amazing to see how much they've grown and evolved in the last year. Than from the first tour that I did. You know, the first tour I did, it was an experience. You know, there wasn't really huge crowds. I worked one show with a lot of names on it, which was Chris Masters, Tajiri was on it. and I think RVD, if I'm not mistaken. But other than that, it was a lot of indie talent who looked at me as like the big massive name because I came from America. You know, they follow a lot of American stuff. They watch Beyond Wrestling. They watch Takara. So when I stepped into one of their rigs, they're like, oh my God, like it's Mike Murda. And I was like, oh, this is flattering. You know, please, you know.
Oh, please don't stop. You know,
yeah, stop, please. Simmer down, guys. Simmer down. But you know, then they really looked at me as like one of their role models, and to me that was the biggest achievement. They looked at me as like the big brother. You know, I'm the guy that is always constantly trying to make sure that Italian talent gets opportunity in the U.S. I remember last year I organized a tour with three Italian wrestlers, and I believe you saw them. I wrestled them for one of the Northeast shows in I think October.
Yes, I do remember that. No shit. Yes.
So I was in charge of basically booking the tour for them. I got them a match at Beyond. I got them with Northeast, you know, Chaotic Wrestling. They basically had a nice, like, 6-7 show tour, which is amazing because, you know, a lot of those guys, it's a dream for them to wrestle in America. You know, a lot of them feel like if they stay in Italy, it's impossible for them to get signed. So they have to make their way to America. They have to get known in America. And then once they get known, they can go back to Italy and they can get signed and all that stuff. So I'm more than proud to help them achieve that goal. And for me to go to Italy every single year and be treated like a king, I'll take it.
No, that must have been pretty cool for you to, you know, go there for the first time and, you know, when you're wrestling. And I think you said, and you were like, and they knew who you were just from, you know, Beyond and, you know,
yeah,
all that.
Just from being really big fans, you know, like they're fans of the industry. They watch every single indie wrestling that they're able to get their hands on, whether it's, you know, independent, whether it's AEW, whether it's WWE, they watch. And if they watch, that means they appreciate it. And that's a thing that I enjoy most more than anything. It's the appreciation of the craft, you know, like as wrestlers, I don't want to say we lose our smile. I don't want to use that term, but sometimes you lose your passion for the craft because it's a grind. It's a really heavy grind on the body. It's a heavy grind on the mental side of it. You just gotta, constantly be, you know, working. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, I love the fact that the work is a grind. You know, I have three careers. I'm a coach, I'm an actor, and I'm a wrestler. Every single career is a grind. I like being constantly working. That's what sucks about this pandemic, is just being kind of like stagnant. But, you know, the point is that, you know, if you appreciate the craft and you love the craft of professional wrestling, then there's nothing better than that. If you love what you do, that's an amazing thing. And I feel like all those wrestlers in Italy, they just love the product. They love wrestling.
Yeah, I absolutely love how you were able to bring, you know, these guys from Italy to wrestle in America. And I remember I was at that show in October. I think it was Autumn Ambush, if I'm not mistaken. If I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, I believe it was that.
One of the shows.
Yeah, me, Perfect Gamble against the Italian Fratelli, as they call themselves.
And I saw those guys. I'm like, my friend was like, do you know them? I'm like, I want to say yes, but no, I don't. I don't know them.
You don't know. As big of a fan as you are, you will not know them.
I was like, no, I don't know who they are. But, you know, after that show, I was like, okay. And then you reminded me, I was like, oh, yeah. No shit. Okay, that's pretty cool, man.
Yeah, man, they're great guys. And I was happy. What I was happy about is that they were able to experience companies that I call home. You know, these are companies that I love. Like, I love being a part of these companies. So, you know. That's what makes me really happy.
Yeah, you know, like, amazing for them, like, you know, getting to wrestle here, you know, getting to just, you know, experience the atmosphere for all these other promotions, you know, that they may not experience up there, you know. So very cool for
you.
I love that.
Absolutely.
We have a question from Anthony Miller. It's actually a question about one of your opponents that you wrestled, Chase Del Monte, and he wants to know, what is your favorite match that you had against Chase Del Monte?
Well, yeah, I'll be honest with you. Chase Del Monte is, till this day, probably one of my best opponents in my entire career. And, you know, I say that because I feel like it's incredibly hard to maintain a 2-year storyline on the indies that the fans are genuinely emotionally attached to. And we did that. I debuted for Chaotic Wrestling in 2016, and our final match was 2018. And that was, and my favorite match, to answer your question, was definitely the Woburn Street Fight, which was the bloodiest match of my career, the bloodiest match in Chaotic history, and was just it was a classic. You know, it's good to get out of your comfort zone. It's good to have the chance to blow off a feud and wrestle in a pair of jeans and have a good old-fashioned street fight covered in blood. I mean, the entire building was covered in blood.
Jesus.
Yeah, if they don't have it released because it's that graphic, but if you get your chance, I mean, it's not a death match, don't get me wrong. It's a really good storytelling, but because of the attachment that the fans had to Chase and myself, seeing us go to that level really, really had them just floored. And mind you, Chaotic Wrestling doesn't allow blood. So for there to be blood under those circumstances, that was the first time that there was an actual, let's put it this way, a non-unplanned job with blood. I don't want to say it without blowing the kayfabe, but you know what I mean? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know
what
you're
saying. It's the first time. It's the first time.
Yeah, there you go, Anthony, man. If you're listening, and Anthony actually said he personally loved, you know, you and Chase in the Warburn street fight. So there you go, Anthony.
Thank
you guys
you.
Both
Thank
have
you,
the same thing. I'm assuming Anthony was at that show. He probably was. I think he goes to all the Chaotic shows out there, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing. Any other opponents, like, in Northeast Wrestling or, you know, beyond that, some opponents you want to?
That I want to wrestle or that I think are really awesome?
The ones that you thought were, like, you know, your favorite.
Yeah. I have my best match right now in this level of my career and the pace and the speed and the level that I'm at. I have my best matches with JT Dunn. JT Dunn and myself, we can wrestle with our eyes closed. We can wrestle in the dark. We can literally wrestle each other blindfolded. It does not matter. We just have great chemistry. He brings out the best of me. He makes me look like $1 million. I try to do the best for him. He's definitely one of my best opponents to this day. Christian Casanova, one of my best chemistry opponents. We just vibe when we put together a match. We have really good ideas. We just bounce off each other. I have really good matches with Wrecking Ball. We fight each other. That's I got to be honest with you. Like, Wrecking Ball, he's a unique opponent. And, you know, this isn't a jab on him, and this isn't an insult to anyone he works with. But sometimes when a guy is that big and that strong, it's hard to work with. You know, it's not the easiest. You know, some guys like me, for example, I'm a strength wrestler. I can jump a little bit, I can fly a little bit, but my strength is my power game. So I can't lift Wrecking Ball like I can lift Christian or I can lift JT Dunn. So sometimes that's a challenge. But when I wrestle Wrecking Ball, we take a different mindset of how we put together our match. We build it based on pure strength and pure power and pure fight. We beat the shit out of each other. I'm sure you see it. You're in the front row. You see the chops.
Oh, yeah.
And we don't hold anything back. We make sure that our bodies and our chests are just burnt by the time we're done. So I really enjoy my matches with Wrecking Ball. I mean, the list goes on. I've had great matches with AG. I've had amazing matches with Flip Gordon before he left. Even Warbeard Hansen. Before Hansen left, you know, he was someone who took me under his wing early. Like, I wrestled him for Five Borough Wrestling in Brooklyn back in, like, 2016 before I even debuted for Chaotic. And, you know, he gave me a 35-minute match and was just so giving to the point where it's like he was a Ring of Honor at the time. He was in New Japan at the time. There was no reason why he should have came in and just let me beat him. You know, it was just one of those things where he's just a true professional. So, I mean, you know, the New England scene is just, it's filled, man. It's filled. It's a hotbed for talent. You know, it's a hotbed for good wrestlers. And I'm lucky that I get a chance to wrestle them on a daily basis.
Yeah. And you were talking about Wrecking Ball, man. I just want to say really quick, you know, before we jump to the next question, I remember your match with Wrecking Ball. I think it was at Spring Slam last year in Massachusetts.
Oh, was it Holyoke?
Yes, you guys tore the house down. Like, I was so, I was just amazed by that match. Like, me and my friend Ramon, man, shout out to my boy Ramon. We were just blown away by that whole match.
Well, thank you, Justin. I appreciate that. And I think that was the first match where Mike Lombardi thought that Mike knew that he could put me and Wrecking Ball together in any match at any time, because we know that he knows that we just trust each other. You know, that's the thing about Wrecking Ball. He's a big guy. He's a scary guy. He's a tough guy. But, you know, you gotta match your strengths with other people's strengths, you know. And, like, if someone wants to do a certain style, give them that certain style. You know, we're in this business now because, you know, you can't be soft when you're a wrestler. You can't be you should not want to be hurt, but you can't be afraid of anything. You know, you can't be afraid to take a bump on the floor if you're feeling good. You can't be afraid to take a chop. Like, you just gotta go in there and just work, you know, and feel the crowd. And I feel like when I wrestle Wrecking Ball, we're able to really gauge the crowd because they know that we're gonna fight. We're gonna get each other, we're gonna beat each other up. That's it.
Yeah. And really quick, sorry, I forgot to shout out his girlfriend too. She loved that match. You know, I want to shout them both out. But no, we were big fans. Yeah, you're welcome, man. We're big fans of that match. But we do have another question. from a fellow nerd. He wants to know, would the money of Jerry Silbercite be able to lure the Man of Steel to the dark side and join the trust fund?
Well, let me put it this way, guys. Before the pandemic happened, I was on quite the losing streak. Quite the losing streak. In fact, I don't think I've won a match since October in Northeast Wrestling. And that was when me and Perfect Gamble wrestled the Italians. That was the last time I won a match. So I haven't won a singles match in maybe before that. I haven't won a singles match maybe in over a year. So my losing streak now has kind of set me to a point where I need to decide what I need to do. And I'm not going to say I'm going to join any dark side. Maybe Jared Silbercite is the light side, from what I understand. You know, I mean, you look at his talent resume and the people that have worked with him. They've all gone on to be world champs, or at least in the world championship picture. That being said, I'm not sold on joining him. I don't think I am going to join him. But every option is open.
There you go, man. I love it. I hope I don't want to see you with a trust fund, man. I'm rooting for you, bro. You know, you got this, man. Like, you know, keep pushing, man, and you'll win something eventually.
I get something. I just got to make sure my game's right. I got to make sure that my priorities are in order. Let's put it that way.
There you go. We have a baseball question, actually, from Joe, nice. Fellow NEW sign guy, Joe. And Joe, we actually Joe G. We actually have a few questions from him, but we will get to the other one in a second. And he wants to know, what Yankee player on today's roster would you trade to the Mets if you had the option?
Do I have to trade a Met player to the Yankees, or do I have to just say I just want a Yankee player?
I think he just says, "What Yankee player would you trade to the Mets if you had the option?"
Gleyber Torres.
All right. Yeah,
I would take Gleyber. He's a youngster. He's got good heart. He's a very good leader. That's what the Mets need. I like young players. That's what the Mets have done in the last couple of years. That they've been able to build a young core. DeGrom, Conforto, Nimmo, you know, Alonso now. You look at their team, it's a lot of homegrown guys. Ahmed Rosario, David Wright before he retired. You know, it was a homegrown team. The entire pitching staff, you look at that. So I like that idea of taking a young player and kind of watching them grow with the franchise.
What has been some of your favorite moments in the Mets history? Like, I'm assuming that you've been to, Shea and Citi Field.
Oh, of course, man. I was at Shea disappeared in 2008. That's when the last year there, and I was born in 1991. So, in fact, you want to hear a good story. I played in the city championship game in my junior year of high school, which was in Shea Stadium.
No shit, dude. That must have been kind of unreal.
Lost. Yeah, well, we lost, so it was kind of sad, but the initial walk into the dugout and the initial walk onto the field, I have no words for that. I cannot describe that.
Must have got, the biggest chills, dude.
Oh, man, tell me about it. Tell me about it.
I love it, man. A fellow nerd, he wants to know, you're known as the Superman of NEW. What is your kryptonite? Yes,
sir. Well, right now, my kryptonite is losing. I'll tell you that much. That is my kryptonite. But my real-life kryptonite is carbs.
I think that's everybody's, dude. That's definitely mine.
Carbs and ice cream.
What's your favorite ice cream?
It varies. I've been a big cookies and cream guy lately, and I know that's very basic, but Haagen-Dazs has this, I don't know if it's new or not, but they have that white chocolate raspberry truffle. That shit is crack. Crack. I can finish it. I'll finish it in literally 10 minutes. It's insane. I didn't want to talk about it because now I'm in the mood for it.
Yeah, dude, I'm probably going to get some ice cream after this.
Hell yeah.
Joe wants to know, and it's just a long question, so it says, you've been getting louder chants of Mike Nisvis. This and Mike at the more recent NEW shows. Do you think that this will push you to win and eventually to some NEW gold? He's really pushing for you.
I think so, yes. So, when I first started NEW, it was different. I was very established in Chaotic. I was very established in Beyond. I was in XWA beforehand. So I kind of built my name in New England wrestling, but to me, Northeast Wrestling was never in that league. Northeast Wrestling has kind of been a league of its own because it's like I said earlier, it's truly a federation. You know, like it has a lineage and a legacy. It's very different. And that doesn't mean that the other companies don't. I just think every company is different. Northeast to me was very different. I felt like it was more sheltered. For example, if I worked for Chaotic, somebody could know me from Beyond. If I worked for Beyond, maybe someone knew me from Chaotic and vice versa. I feel like the roster in Northeast Wrestling is a little bit more tight-knit. So I had to break in there. And even though people knew who I was and I got a good reaction when I debuted, they needed to get to know me. And I still feel like a lot of fans are still in the getting to know period, even though I've been working for Northeast now for 2 years. but I feel like I'm finally put into a situation where the fans feel and they are emotionally attached to me. In the beginning, I was kind of pushed to the moon a little bit, where I kind of won a couple of squash matches, and I didn't really get into any major storylines, but I got into a lot of matches where I just won because I won. You know what I'm saying? I was better than the opponent. I beat them pretty easily, and I moved on. So I feel like because of that, the fans weren't able to kind of attach to me. And now I feel like with this losing streak, and I hate to call it a losing streak because it sucks that I've been losing so much and I can't fix it, but it's a way for them to turn around and say, he's good. We like him, and he can't win. And because he can't win, it's like they want to see it happen. You know, it's almost like it's weird. It's like I didn't even want to call it like, I don't want to sit there and say, oh, man, it's going to be we're going to pop champagne when I win a match, because I win matches at other places. You know, for some reason, I just can't win in Northeast. I'm getting overzealous. I'm getting, too occupied in trying to win. And I'm getting too frustrated with myself, trying to use my anger. Like, I've been getting violent in matches, and it's just costing me. So I feel like if the crowd just sticks with me and that emotional attachment is still there, I mean, I really feel like we can kind of have a Keith Youngblood story.
Yeah.
Where he kind of won the fans over, and then now look at him, he's in the title picture, and that's ultimately where my goal is to be Northeast Wrestling Heavyweight Champion.
There you go. Exactly, dude. And someone actually asked, they said, since you and BRG both haven't really been able to win, do you guys maybe think you'll form a tag team and maybe chase after the NEW tag team titles?
Pretty Boy BRG. I'll definitely think about that. I actually like Brett. Brett's a good worker.
Yeah, he's a good kid.
He's gonna once he starts getting into his own skin and he starts really getting his business, he's gonna be just fine.
Yeah, I love that.
So it may be 5 years from now, I might have to be asking him if I could be his tag team. The other way around.
Yeah, you never know, dude.
Yeah.
Awesome talking to you, bro. Thank you so much for coming on today, man.
This was a lot of fun. This was a really, really fun interview. I got to be honest with you. I will definitely be back if you guys need me.
Oh, yeah, 100%, man. I'll definitely have you back soon. But, we actually have one last question. It's actually really good question. She wants to know, what advice would you give to someone aspiring to become a professional wrestler?
I love this question, and I answer it often. And the reason why I answer it often is because I feel like you need to think this way before you jump into it. Now, for me, I knew, like I said, I was a baseball player. I played baseball all my life, so I was always an athlete. But what held me, my last playing year was 2009. I coached 2010, and I knew that I was going to be a wrestler. But what I wanted to do in that 1 year before I started was to make sure that my body was physically and not even visually, physically and visually prepared for the business. And what I mean by that is I didn't need to be a bodybuilder. I didn't need to be super jacked, but I needed to be at least in shape, because we know that's part of the game. You kind of have, it doesn't mean you don't have to be huge. You don't have to be looking like a Greek god, but you gotta have something behind you that makes you endure this, because with muscle comes protection to your neck, protection to your back, protection to everything else that we obviously throw to the ground on a daily basis. So I wanted to make sure it was there, and I also wanted to make sure that I was mentally prepared. This business is a grind. It's not easy. It's very disheartening at times. It can bully you at times. It can make you feel, and it can make you feel great at times. It's a bipolar mood, wrestling. You can come out, you can have a bad match, and you can hate the business, and you can hate everyone in it. And then you can come out the next week or the next night and have an amazing match with an amazing friend, and you get a great reaction. You make a lot of money on merch, and you're like, oh, this is the best business in the world. It fluctuates like that. As crazy as it sounds, that's how it fluctuates. And you kind of just have to be ready for all that. And that's really my biggest advice for anyone trying to get into the business is, you can be a fan, but once you step into the ring and for your first day of training, you're no longer a fan. You're a fan of the craft, but you're a professional.
Yeah.
And you have to be ready for that. Once you're ready for that, you can achieve anything. But until you're ready for that, it's tough. You're gonna get yourself into a big situation that maybe you're not ready for.
I love that advice, man. That's probably one of the best advice I ever heard, man. That was great.
Oh, I appreciate that. I appreciate it. You know what it is? It's an advice that I took myself very seriously. So I try to push that forward on anybody, because I know it works,
Yeah, 100%, dude. Before we sign off, man, drop some plugs. Tell the Nerds of Wrestling where they can find Mike Verna.
Yes, please. Thank you. First of all, Nerds of Wrestling, thank you for having me. Justin, thank you for having me on this podcast. It's always a pleasure to see you guys at the Northeast Wrestling shows. You're always engaged. You're always involved. You're making our lives 10 times easier. You're putting, you know, money in our pockets, food on our tables. You keep us enjoying what we do. So thank you guys specifically. Thank you, Nerds of Wrestling Podcast, for keeping Nerds of Wrestling in general, for keeping us relevant during this time, because we all know that without shows, it's very hard for us to stay relevant. And you guys have done a really good job at doing that. So I'm telling you, I could speak on behalf of many wrestlers out there. We are indebted to you. We appreciate you. And we can't wait to do what we do back once we get back to action. And again, it will be for you guys. But last but not least, yes, you can follow me at Man of Steel MV on Twitter and Instagram. My Facebook is my real name. I got that 5,000 friend thing. So if I don't accept you, please don't feel slighted by it. Other than that, like I said, thank you guys. And I really cannot wait to get back to action. The more time passes, the more it makes me want to get back in the ring. And it makes me, more than anything, really wants me to get back in the ring in front of you fans. That's really the biggest thing.
There you go, Nerds. Definitely go follow Mike Verna. Mike, thank you so much again. I will definitely have you on again very soon. But, you know, until then, bro, stay safe, wash your hands, and I'll definitely hopefully see you sooner rather than later.
Oh, hell yeah, man. Hell yeah.
All right, Mike, have a great day, and we'll stay in touch.
You too, Justin.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, buddy.
And that concludes this episode on the Nerds of Wrestling Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to like, share, and subscribe for more future episodes. I'm your host, Justin Del Rio. Peace out, nerds.